Harold Bruce Knapp, your host on Worldwide UFO News Radio. Strange days indeed.
Last week, we had Lauren Coleman on the program, and we talked about the upcoming, as it was then, Mothman Prophecies and a documentary on Mothman, which the FX channel was to run last Wednesday evening in the United States. Well, the opening of Mothman and the running of the Mothman documentary happened last week. And so we asked Lauren to come back and join us again tonight and talk about both the movie and the documentary. For those of you who are unaware of Lauren Coleman, he's one of the world's leading cryptozoologists. He's an honorary member of the British Columbia Scientific Cryptozoology Club and several other organizations. He's also a life member of the International Society of Cryptozoology. His new book, Mothman and Other Curious Encounters, is the latest in a series, along with more than 200 articles on the subject. Joining us from his home in Maine on the phone is cryptozoologist Lauren Coleman. Welcome back, Lauren.
Well, it's good to be here again.
Some really good reviews of the movie in the media this last few days.
Yes, there's been quite a few reviews, and unfortunately they're split, though. Some people really like it, and some people don't like it, so It's just going to be one of those movies. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I've actually seen it twice now. It's quite exciting to see John Keel's book come to life, and the director, who, of course, did Arlington Road, really did a good job getting the feeling correct and the moodiness and what happens when witnesses experience these things that are so extraordinary that they can't really believe they're happening.
The Scarborough Mirror, which is my local newspaper and is actually dated tomorrow, the 27th, there's a review of the movie there by Stuart Green. The opening and closing paragraphs say it's not easy to make a monster movie that never shows the monster. It takes a certain skill on the director's part to make us believe that there is this menacing being or beast or entity that's threatening and tormenting our protagonists without relying on special effects and puppets to give the monster form. Mm-hmm. But director Mark Pellington has done just that with the effective and chilling supernatural thriller The Mothman Prophecies. The closing line I totally agree with. The Mothman Prophecies is both creepy and captivating and occasionally jump out of your seat scary as hell, too.
Yeah. It's very good that way, and really as the bookend with the documentary, I really find them wonderful companion pieces.
Was that about the making of the movie?
No, not at all. It was actually about the real incidents in Point Pleasant. It goes through various sightings. It uses archival footage. John Keel and myself are sort of the expert spokespeople, and then there's various witnesses that they have interviewed, 35 years later. They show minimal recreations. It doesn't go into that much. It much more uses footage from that time as well as photographs, and then goes all through the different incidents, the sightings of Mothman, the Men in Black cases, the feelings, sort of sinisterness, even the cattle mutilations, and then the collapse of the Silver Bridge. It's very much a documentary. As one of my associates emailed me right after it was shown, he said, "We don't even have to put up with those stupid idiot rebuttals from, other experts."
Whoa, and did we lose you, Lauren? Yep, we lost Lauren. There is very much strangeness going on here with the phones tonight. Not sure what that is. I got in my headphones here. I don't know what it was like for you folks. But I know when it happened to Dave Ferlot about an hour ago, he said it was very loud in his ear. The Mothman Prophecies is definitely well worth seeing from my point of view, as I said earlier on. Nary a mention of UFOs, although once we get Lauren back, we'll pick up.
Hello?
Hi, Lauren.
Do you understand what just happened?
No, and it happened a little bit earlier on when we were talking about Mothman, too.
Right. Well, the big part of the movie, of course, and what happened to John Keel, the telephone problems where these large noises would come out of the phone, and I couldn't even hear you. I want to tell you something that has just happened. in Point Pleasant, they had a massive power failure on Thursday in which all of the phones and the power in the middle of the city went out.
The phones went out as well?
Yes, the phones went out as well.
Now, that's unusual in a power outage.
Right. And they could not make any of the phones work. And then as recently as Friday, I was hearing that the phones in the hospital, Point Pleasant, of course, is right on the Ohio River.
Mm-hmm.
You could call locally in West Virginia, but you couldn't call across the river to Ohio.
That's very strange.
Yeah.
So you got an email from your friend
immediately
after the Mothman documentary ran on the FX channel down there in the States.
Right. He essentially said, we don't have to put up with stupid rebuttals, which often happens in these documentaries. They trot on some skeptical expert to put all of the witnesses down, and that just didn't happen with this documentary. It was very even keel.
As has been said on this program many times before, the so-called scientists who keep popping up on these programs haven't practiced science in at least in the lifetime of their kids. They're professional skeptics, debunkers, financed by I don't know whom, but they seem to spend most of their time trying to get on television programs to poo-poo, debunk all kinds of stuff, and particularly they tend to lump UFOs together with psychics and all of the other strange paranormal things that go on.
Right.
Really, they become laughable. I mean, my dad, who knows absolutely nothing about this stuff, other than that his son is involved with some strangeness, and he sat and watched one of these documentaries and sat there and just howled with laughter at these so-called scientists with their preposterous explanations.
Yeah. Luckily, the Mothman phenomena, except for myself and John Keel and a few Fortians and Jerry Clark and different people like that that mm-hmm. have studied it, it's really kind of new to so many people. The skeptics haven't even been able to catch up.
For the people who weren't with us last week, some of the things that happened, 67 in Point Pleasant?
Well, it all started on November 15th, 1966. Two couples were just kind of cruising around the TNT area, which is where World War II munitions were stored. And so it's a very deserted area surrounded by even more 10,000-acre wildlife preserve. And all of a sudden, they came upon this creature that seemed to be between 6 and 7 feet tall, kind of man-like, they thought. And then they saw that it had two wings, apparently no head, but the headlights of the car caught these two enormous red eyes coming towards them as this thing sort of shuffled towards them. They got in their car. They, you know, I think in a somewhat exaggerated way said, they were going down the road at 100 miles an hour. I just drove that road 3 weeks ago and kind of tested it out. They probably were going between 60 and 70 miles an hour at least.
That's fast enough to get away from most things.
Right. And as they were going away, one of the women looked out the back window and she saw this creature was flying right, keeping up with them.
Tailgating them.
And flying there. And at the town's edge, the creature disappeared. They went and got the sheriff. The sheriff went out there, and he got a little spooked, and he said, I think I'll come back in the morning and investigate some further. So, and it just kept happening. The next night, in the same area, another woman and her family saw the creature, and the laughs and ridicule that were really there in the beginning, the first two or three or four witnesses, quickly disappeared when it turned into this phenomenon, which by the end of it, over 100 people had seen Mothman.
But there were also UFO sightings there at the same time, right? In fact, a large number of UFO sightings were happening at the same time.
Well, the Ohio River Valley at the time was experiencing a flap, definitely a flap. And John Keel, who had been given some advance money from a publisher, and also he was writing for Playboy at the time, he was on this job to really try to write up an article about the UFOs, and he kind of stumbled into Mothman, and he became the lightning rod for various stories, such as the UFO stories that were coming out quite a bit, and he actually saw UFOs with one of the reporters down there, would take his flashlight and blink his flashlight, and the UFOs seemed to blink back.
Mm.
He also got involved in the Men in Black reports, where people were being silenced, and one individual, Connie Carpenter, felt she was actually kidnapped by being pulled into one of these black cars. So it got to be very spooky.
I guess.
Yeah.
I assume that that time, 66, 67, the winter of 66, it was the height of the Men in Black phenomenon, too, huh?
I think the whole thing about Point Pleasant is it was the height of everything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you had poltergeist reports, Men in Black reports, UFO reports, even some cattle mutilations for John Keel's talks in very, you know, somewhat probably exaggerated way about a cattle looking as if it had been cut in half with a giant pair of scissors, dog mutilations, just all kinds of activities, at least in Point Pleasant, that were an explosion. Yes, really since the late 50s into the middle of the 70s, Men in Black were very popularly being talked about with UFO cases.
The documentary that ran on FX, it covered off all of these incidents that happened that winter of 66?
Oh, yes. As you know from watching the movie, the Men in Black were only marginally talked about in the movie, but in the documentary, there was quite a bit of the Men in Black in there.
I'm trying to think back to Wednesday night when we saw it at the screening. You know what, Lorne? I don't remember Men in Black there.
No, I think that the only kind of allusion is the entity that he saw near the power plant.
Oh, right.
And, you know, there's
the pinhead.
Right. And there's the confusion between Indrid Cold and Men in Black. And in John's book, he talks about getting phone calls from Apo. And Apo doesn't really show up in the movie. I think that would have added an extra entity that they couldn't have really dealt with. It was getting pretty crowded there in Richard Gere's motel room.
Motel room, yeah. And that was, there were actually some very, very nice moments in there.
Oh, yeah.
An interesting thing with the mirror in the bathroom.
Oh, yes. I was scared much more was going to happen, and I think that was the whole point.
It was this sort of delicious anticipation of,
right,
of having all the hair on your body stand up.
Right. It makes looking in a mirror a whole new experience for everyone.
Doesn't it, though? Did you get that one, Dean? Okay, let's talk. Hi, Henry. Welcome back to the program.
How are you doing, guys?
Hello.
This Mothman thing you're talking about, has this occurred anywhere else in the United States or elsewhere?
Well, that's the whole premise of my book, Mothman and Other Curious Encounters, is really to look at the precursors and all of the other things. Yes, indeed, Mothman as sightings has happened really all over the United States and Canada. And I think part of the problem here is the use of the word Mothman. Mothman was a word that was invented by a copy editor who was in love with the Batman series in 1966. The witnesses at the time and still today, as recently as yesterday when I was talking to them, they talk about seeing a giant bird, a large bird. They would call it the big bird down there. They would talk about the power plant that was abandoned as the bird cage. It was only when the newspapers took it over and called it Mothman that it really got confused. If you look at Native American traditions, Native Canadian traditions, it really is very close to the Thunderbird. And so the Thunderbird traditions and the Mothman are really one and the same, and you can kind of go back and forth in some of the tellings. And also the Native West Virginians had tales about flying heads 200 years ago that looked like giant owls. And so some of that really overlaps into the Mothman.
Can I get one more point in?
Sure.
Yeah, I'm just curious, you know, does the government investigate this? I mean, has there been any attempt to silence investigators like yourself or anybody else who's trying to explore this, you know, the Men in Black type thing?
People like Jerry Clark and John Keel are closer to the Men in Black. I've been doing this for 40 years, and I've never had a government official. John Keel says in the documentary that he investigated whether or not the FBI or the Air Force were interested in and really there in Point Pleasant. He didn't find any evidence for that. He thought that the FBI may have come in and investigated the bridge a little bit later, but that was a whole different situation. So a lot of people...
And we lost him again, did we, Dean? That's very strange. It's almost as if something comes in there and lays in feedback and it just builds and builds. Did we lose Henry as well? Are you still there, Henry? No, he's not. All lines are doing strange things tonight, but that's the name of this program, Strange Days Indeed. And we've done 173 and have had not a lot of strangeness to happen to us in this way, as we have this evening, third time. Of course, the techs will come in here at some point and be out there in the control room and scratch their heads and say, well, we don't know what's going on. It's just one of those things.
Hello.
Yeah, I
want a tape of this. I need to analyze this.
We're rolling tape on it, and it's very odd because you start to echo slightly, and then Dean out in the control room pulled your fader down a little bit, and it stopped it building, but at the same time there was a slow build toward that tone that just blew you and Henry out of here.
Well, that's Mothman for you.
Well, it certainly seems to be. You were in the midst of saying that in the American Native tradition, and the North American Native tradition, there are thunderbirds. Last time we talked,
right?
You see thunderbirds on the totem poles everywhere. And there are also all kinds of very strange stories in the Native tradition about the sky people.
Right, and we know there weren't men in black back then,
mm-mm.
You know, investigating. And so it's sometimes just the Thunderbird.
Just the Thunderbird. Program 173, fraught with Mothman tonight, getting our phones blown out from under us a couple of times in that last half hour. Lauren Coleman, who's one of the world's leading cryptozoologists, is with us. His new book, Mothman and Other Curious Encounters, is the latest in a series, along with more than 200 articles on the subject. He's one of the world's leading cryptozoologists. Also with us tonight is a man who's been following the UFO controversy or controversy for four decades or so now and is an internationally respected authority on the subject. He's the editor of the International UFO Reporter, the magazine of the J. Allen Hynek Center for UFO Studies. He's written the award-winning three-volume UFO Encyclopedia from 1990 to 1996. A huge, huge body of work, just those three books there. If you want a definitive book to lay your hands on and don't want to buy the three-volume encyclopedia, in the bookstores is the UFO book. I have it in my bag. I think I brought it into the station every Saturday night for the last 173 weeks. He's also written Unexplained and has contributed a chapter titled The Extraterrestrial Hypothesis in the Early UFO Age in the book that we've talked about many times on this program, UFOs and Abductions, Challenging the Borders of Knowledge, and published by, Kansas University Press, Jury?
University Press of Kansas.
University Press of Kansas.
Edited by David M. Jacobs.
Welcome back to the program, Jerome Clark.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's good to have you here. You saw Mothman this week also?
Saw it last night.
And how was it for you, Jerry?
It was a terrific movie. It was gripping. It was suspenseful. It was intelligent. It was honest from the point of view of those of us who have been following bizarre stuff for a long time. It
mm-hmm.
was one of the very few movies that get it right.
Close Encounters of the Fourth Kind, I thought, was on the money as far as certainly this neophyte back then was concerned. It was an on-the-money movie. Did you feel shortchanged about the lack of the UFO side of things in that movie, Jerome Clark?
Oh, not particularly. Where I was long-changed, where I was very happy. You know, when you see movies, most movies are kind of on a kindergarten level, and everything's got to be neatly wrapped up, and all has to be solved for you. You have to
yes.
put it in a little package. This mm-hmm. movie was really honest in the way it showed that with the sorts of things that sorts of weird stuff that happens in the world, there's no simple explanation. You know, there's no conventional explanation that works. There's no extraordinary explanation that works. So what's going on really is so far beyond our level of knowledge, maybe even our ability to imagine, that we don't have answers. And the movie was honest about that. It didn't give you answers. It just said, you know, there are some incredibly strange things that go on, and they have this certain kind of dynamics, a certain sort of pattern, but it doesn't add up to anything that we can understand.
I think what I liked about it on reflection and sitting here while you were saying that was the fact that the Richard Gere character, Klein, managed to get out from under where he got sucked in for quite a while by everything that was going on around him and things that were happening to him, but managed to step back from it in a way that in horror movies, I don't want to use that word, but in scary movies, most of the people in the movie don't. They get sucked in and they stay there and end up paying a terrible price for it.
Or they triumph in some cheap fashion.
Cheesy fashion.
Yeah. Oh, I think what was about this movie that was so impressive from the point of view of, you know, somebody who's just spent a lot of time paying attention to this stuff,
mm-hmm.
is that he just finally acknowledged that he could not get on top of it, and also that it was not what it appeared to be, that there were just many levels beneath surface appearances. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly true. That's the way it is. Ordinarily, we think there are two choices. Either you just dismiss it, you blow it all off, and there's nothing there, or you take it literally. And neither option is really the honest one, the true one. And the reality is that you're just dealing with some kind of black hole of ambiguity and weirdness, mm-hmm. and you're never going to get to the bottom of it.
Both Jerome Clark and our other guest tonight, Lauren Coleman.
Lauren and I are old buddies.
Yes, you are. You both spent time with the man who wrote the Mothman Prophecies, the book that the movie was based on. How do you find John Keel as far as the reports that he made in his book? Are you both inclined to believe his experiences?
One part of what I did in my new book is really try to talk about Keel, because I think that you have to really understand that Keel wears certain sunglasses in which he looks through the phenomena, and that comes through in his writings, it comes through in the movies, and we have to really sometimes step back from that and say, okay, how much of this is John, and how much is this the encounter or the incident? And I think sometimes people have either discounted outright much of this material because they don't agree with some of John's what seem to be occasionally very outrageous theories,
mm-hmm.
or they in fact embrace it so much in a cult-like way that then people say, well, we don't want to go down that road either. So it gets to be very confusing in this vortex of John Keel and the Mothman.
Mm. I think one thing you could say about Keel is that he's a real misanthrope. And he seems to have this, he does have this really jaded, cynical, pessimistic view of the human race. And I think that really kind of colors and maybe distorts what he sees and what he writes about. I mean, there's a lot of truth and insight in what John Keel writes, and there's also a lot of really kind of, charitably clouded vision.
The character that Klein went to see in Chicago, Alexander Leake, was he somewhat like John Keel?
Yes, very much so. I mean, John Keel is in two different characters in that movie.
Uh-huh.
Very much so. But the other thing, though, that's the John Keel that comes out in the writings sometimes is very different from the very human person that went to Point Pleasant, and people invited him into their homes, and he became the lightning rod, the curmudgeon to really kind of, he was a big teddy bear there, and people would come around and tell stories, and John has that about
him. Uh-oh, here comes that feedback again.
Not on for me.
No, I'm just starting to hear it in my cans here. Yes,
Sarah, you don't know the problems we've had tonight. Mothman irritations in our ear.
Yeah, in the phone system. He was a curmudgeon, but at the same time, a lovable curmudgeon, you're saying, Lauren?
Yeah, sort of, you know, a warm, fuzzy one.
Mm-hmm.
And people loved him. When I was down there just 3 weeks ago, because I have a beard and John had a beard, the grandchildren of Linda Scarberry, they started calling me John because they were getting confused about, was I John Keel or was I Lauren Coleman?
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty interesting.
Well, as long as you know the difference, Lauren.
I certainly do.
With your experience...
John Keel actually introduced Jerry and I.
Lauren and I have known each other since about, was 1970?
No, 69.
Okay.
Yeah, John Keel introduced us through letters. And then we ended up in Illinois together for a while in two different ends of the state.
We're just a couple of brothers.
Crypto brothers.
Crypto brothers.
Your experiences of John Keel, Jerry, much the same as Lauren's?
Well.
I don't want to start anything here. I would just...
You won't.
But if there are competing points of view, it would be interesting to hear them.
Well, I don't think that Lauren and I really see John differently. It's just that Lauren is personally closer to him than I am.
Mm-hmm.
That John and I parted ways years ago, but I think that we both see John the same way, and both, you know, in our own ways have a degree of affection.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked to John as recently as 2 days ago, and I talked to him a lot during the last year. I went to his birthday party in New York City, but he would say things to me like the cult literature and the leper colony, and that's John. I'm getting weird echoes.
Yes, you are, and we're hearing it here, too. Keel described ufology as demonology at some point, didn't he, Jerry?
Yes, and this, of course, is where I part from him, and I'm sure Lauren does, too, that, yes, we're dealing with extremely strange and difficult to understand stuff, maybe impossible to understand stuff,
mm-hmm.
given, you know, our current state of knowledge. But I think that this doesn't give us the, you know, free rein to return to the Middle Ages and say, you know, demons or your name, your supernatural entity is responsible for this. That doesn't explain anything. That's just, you know, answering one mystery with words that have no meaning except the ones you assign to them. I believe very strongly that we have to keep our foothold in science and reason and empiricism.
And I tried to reclaim Mothman for cryptozoology, away from the folklorist and the demonologist. And John and I really do differ in that realm, is that he believes it's just an entity that some other person would say was some kind of monster in some other place. And I really think that these are finite kind of cryptids that we can actually look for evidence and disregard or regard.
I think that in some ways, I hope I'm not speaking unfairly for you, Lauren, but you and I know each other pretty well.
Right.
I think that Lauren and I believe in science and not superstition, whereas I think that Keel thinks that science is superstition.
And in case listeners think that we're talking about John Keel behind his back, John Keel is fairly much retired now. I think he's done one radio interview in the last 300 years.
Bad.
In support of The Mothman Prophecies, the movie. Much as we'd love to have him on this program, the general feeling is that he's not going to come and be here himself.
Jerry might be able to answer that question you were asking me earlier. Was 1966-67 the apex of the Men in Black activity in the United States?
Possibly.
Possibly.
You know, possibly. You know, there's no shortage, as you know, of weird stories.
Mm-hmm.
People tell weird stories.
Yeah, people love to tell
strange
weird stories.
Strange guy mm-hmm. who was bothering them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really hard to quantify these things because they're really not talking anything that we can, you know, nail down, take into a laboratory, you know, publish in a scientific journal. We just have people's stories of strange experiences, and we hear them only by accident. There are very, very few people and absolutely no established organizations, elite organizations, going out and collecting data like these. And so anything we say is just sort of our impression of things. One thing that John Keel did, and the one thing that I was a little disappointed about the movie The Mothman Prophecies was that a lot of the fun of John's book of the same title is his recounting of Men in Black stories. And there are no Men in Black in the movie. In fact, my wife mentioned that fact when she was leaving the theater. She said, "Where were the Men in Black?"
And congratulations, by the way, Jerry, and getting married.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Thanks.
Yeah, where were the Men in Black?
They were in A Beautiful Mind.
Yes. That also had some sort of UFO connotations, too, didn't it?
And it had a man in black.
And it had a man in black.
Is that right? I haven't seen
that movie. Oh, yes, you have to see that.
Lauren, where do you go from here? I mean, your book is out now. You've been involved with the Mothman documentary a lot with John Keel and presumably peripherally around the movie. You've put on a huge rush to get the book out. And now do you sit back and take a breath, or are you leaping into other cryptozoological mysteries?
Believe it or not, there's still some interviews coming up.
There's that horrible silence again. Well, Dean is frantically working his fingers in the control room to try and recover those calls. It's time for me to sit back and take a breath and relax. Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Is this Jerry?
This is Lauren.
You're both still there.
We're both still here. It's a good thing we're not paranoid.
Well,
amazing.
Did try and warn you at the outset of this, Jerry, that this was going on. And
third time for me.
I will not be paranoid.
Do not tell your new wife about this.
Yeah. And ignore the knocking at the door at 3 o'clock in the morning.
2:30 in the morning.
Yes.
2:30 in the morning, right?
Yeah.
Well, you have to tell your Gordon Smallwood story.
The movie is full of just inside jokes.
Some of them go back way earlier than my experience of all of this.
Right. So. Some of them are extremely arcane, and only those of us who have wasted our lives reading every UFO book in print would probably get. But the prime secondary character is a contactee named Gordon Smallwood in the movie.
Yes.
Will Patton.
Will Patton, the actor Will Patton. And this is the guy who contacts Indrid Cold, which was actually the alleged alien contact of a contactee named Woody Durenberger, whom Keel writes about in his Mothman Prophecies.
Okay.
But anyway, in the movie he's named Gordon Smallwood. Well, in about 1954, there was a Quebec ufologist named Lamont Mitris who claimed that he had a piece of a flying saucer. And this mysterious man had come and claimed that he was from the Canadian government but really couldn't produce credentials, but persuaded Mitris to surrender this piece of a flying saucer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the first book ever written about Men in Black was published in 1956. The author was the late Gray Barker, who was from West Virginia. The title of the book was They Knew Too Much About Flying Saucers. And in the book, he didn't give Lamont Mitris' real name. He called him Gordon Smallwood. And so the script writer obviously had read Gray Barker's book and named this character Gordon Smallwood. It was just like a kind of an inside the beltway joke.
And we lost them again. Inside the beltway joke. The days they do become stranger.
Right.
Oh, and there you are. You're both back again. I don't know how you managed.
I am not a paranoid.
Gentlemen, we have to bail out of here. Okay. Thank you both for joining us tonight.
You take care, Jerry.
You too, Lauren.
Go to www.virtuallystrange.net, click UFOs, click Strange Days Indeed. The contacts, websites, addresses, book information, all of that stuff is there under Program 173 for both Lauren Coleman and Jerome Clark. Thank you both, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Look forward to spending some time with you where we don't have telephone noise and telephone disruption.